Welcome to A New Lens with CommaGood Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of CommaGood Capital. 2 weeks ago, I think it was, I was in Africa and had the pleasure of meeting Emmanuel. And Emmanuel, pronounce your last name for us.
Sanganwa.
That's exactly why I didn't try to say it. Well, so we had a pleasure of meeting Emmanuel. We got to travel around the country a little bit, and we had some amazing dialogue. So I'm anxious to open up some of these dialogues for our listeners to hear. By a way of a brief introduction to Emmanuel, he is a recent hire of Fortis Green, and his role there is an investment analyst. But I'm going to leave the rest of the intro to you to describe a little about who you are and whatnot. So first of all, Emmanuel, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
So to start off, where are you located right now, geographically?
Yeah, right now I'm in Kigali, Rwanda, actually calling from the office. I thought it's great.
And so just to give context, it's about 11:40 in the morning, and you're 6 hours ahead of us right now, I believe.
Yeah, that is exactly true. We 5:30 p.m.
5:30 p.m. All right, so we got to get this done so you can go home. So why don't you start out, give us a little background of yourself. Where did you grow up? A little about your schooling, and then a little about your career, which obviously you're just getting started. But give us a little background of who you are. I'll probably interrupt you and ask you a few more questions, but because you've got such a fascinating upbringing. So let's just start there.
Yeah, definitely, Jeff. I grew up in Rwanda, in the south part of the country. It's exactly the village next to Burundi. So I grew up at the border of Rwanda and Burundi. That means I can speak fluently Kirundi. So it's about 8 hours drive from Kigali to get to a village where I grew up. So I lived there since I was born in 1998 and went to school there for both primary and high school. I left my village in 2018. That is when I left my village after high school, came to Kigali. I was lucky. That time I got selected by the program called the Bridge to Rwanda. Then when I left, I joined the Bridge to Rwanda for 16 months until 2020. That is when I left Rwanda to the U.S. to go to college, Babson College in Massachusetts. So I came back recently in 20. So for my full time, now based in Kigali, working for Fortis Green as an investment analyst. Growing up, my village is so special in its own. So we grew up with so little to be exposed to in terms of any other opportunities besides watching our parents go in the farm. My parents are subsistence farmers, so that is pretty much what I grew up looking at. And that was going to potentially be my next destination if I didn't have a chance to go to school. So my schooling, it was all public schools, community schools, primary, basic one, with limited resources in terms of libraries, access to electricity and labs, access to IT tools like computer. I remember my first time that I touched computer actually for like an hour. It was after high school when I was applying for Bridge to Rwanda, actually, and I then owned my computer in college. That is when I had a computer that I called my own. So yeah, that is the context that I grew up in.
So can you describe to us a little bit, just so we can get a sense, if we were to visit with you to your village, what would we see?
So definitely, the very first thing you're gonna see is smiley faces. despite all the challenges, but the community is very friendly, loving. People are gonna be smiling, saying hello. But also, you're gonna observe all the economic side of things that is totally different from what you have in the States. For example, the roads are not gonna be paved, so running water in most part, you're not gonna see. People are gonna be going to fetch water down the valley. Electricity, you might need to charge your phone, or you might, you know, need to watch some news. So probably you ask somebody, be like, hey, we don't have electricity here. But still, lovely community, showing love, smiling.
So then let's stop for a second here, because we're going to talk about what you do. And so obviously you work for FortisGreen, which does renewable energy. You know, in America, we turn on our lights, turn on our AC. We never think about not having power. You know, you have a hurricane in Florida and power goes out. Okay, so you're out of power for a few days, or there's some, you know, brownouts in California. But the average American just does not even think about not having power. Can you help articulate what it's like to grow up without power, and how getting power to, for example, your village, how impactful that would be?
So specifically, I grew up with no access to electricity, not even solar panels. Back then, we used the candles, or there were some petrol lights that we used. So that is what I grew up using. And first of all, it would mean that for greatly on my side, it meant not having enough light, enough time to do my school, to revise, to do my homework, sit at the home and read. So that meant that after 5 p.m., that it was dark. It was totally dark. And what was next is go to sleep. And that also translated to being less productive at a school. But also, it means a lot of things in business perspective. It means that a lot of businesses are not going to be able to work or operate a lot of at the night. So if it is at the dark at 5 p.m., everybody's going to close and go home. But also, other technologies like computers rely on internet or rely on power. That means they are never going to come to communities like mine, where there is a limited access to electricity. So for the people who have privilege and to have access to electricity and they never think about it, I've been there. I know I went to school in the US, and electricity, internet, running water, even hot shower, all those were unlimited. And I actually I never thought of, you know, missing on those ones. So I know I've been there. So when you have something, you have access to something, your mind tends to not really think about it a lot. It means a lot for us, for some communities where the switch, for example, is in one room and not everyone actually can switch off and on the lights. So it really means a big deal. And getting electricity or supplying electricity to communities like these ones will mean young generation, young people will have more access to education. That will increase their productivity at school, but also a lot of businesses, a lot of technology innovations. People start thinking of starting barbershops, will think of starting milling small businesses. They will think of starting cafe, small cafes where I can easily go and write an email to my friend who's abroad. But currently that is not possible because electricity is still something that is not accessible there.
Okay, so here's a question for you. So you went to Babson College in Massachusetts. How long before you took power for granted after being here?
So I cannot even remember.
Would you say eventually you got to the point where you didn't think about it? It was part of your daily life?
I got to the point where I was not even thinking about power or water or internet.
This is a big question because you're now with Fortis Green. You're now an analyst. Although before we go there, I was just reading an article about you and it was great. So you've actually started a nonprofit?
Yes. So growing up, so I really didn't have access to great education. So in high school, I wanted to study sciences, and it happened that in my sector, there was no school providing sciences. So I had to move to another sector, which meant walking 2 hours a day.
Walking 2 hours a day?
Yes, every morning. I used to wake up at like 4:30, get ready, leave my home at 5:30 to get to school, to start at school at 7:30. So I was walking 2 hours to get to school, then 2 hours to come back so that I could. And I did that for 3 years to get access to sciences. I was studying physics, chem, and biology. So that really, I was lucky because I put in a lot of effort. I did well in high school. But interestingly, I was the only one who did well and could actually be able to go to college. Mm. And the reason why a lot of people, actually all my colleagues, didn't do well, it's not because they were not brilliant. They were, but the journey was too long, first of all. And also the infrastructure at school was not really good. In terms of library, labs, computer, books. So it took, extraordinary mind actually to overcome that. And not every of my colleague was like me. And I think it's really tough test to put a young people on. It's really like trying to become a Marine and you're still young. So I was lucky that I got out of that successfully and had a chance to continue my education through Bridge to Rwanda, then to Babson. But when I look back, I was like, those colleagues who stayed, they are now farmers. They are next generation. They're the people who will be more likely poor because only what they have is access, is only what they're doing now is subsistence farming, which is really not that great compared to if they had access to education or continued their education. So that is the way I started a nonprofit. I co-founded the 9 Mile Project with my friends at Babson so that we could support and provide the tuition and the school materials to brilliant students from my village and other villages who are qualified to go to better schools, but their parents cannot afford tuition and school materials. That is what I do on a volunteer basis. So we pay school fees, buy school materials for students, and on average it takes us $120 per semester to send a student to the best school and have everything covered.
That's wonderful. I'll have to put a link to this article about you because that's it was very well done and describes a little bit more about that. So then how would you best describe yourself in the context of where you're at in your life journey?
At this point, I do not even I cannot even comprehend what are the forces behind where I am now compared to where I came from. I would say I'm just a fresh graduate from college, starting full time. This is my first full time job at Forest Green. But also, it's very unimaginable gap that I crossed from coming from my village to landing full time job at Forest. So for me, this is the best time to sit and digest and comprehend all those forces that uplifted me from my village to where I am now. Maybe the meaning of my position or where I am now will come clear as time goes on. But for now, I'll just say I'm lucky, and I know that I'm very committed to paying it forward to uplift others or contribute to their lives.
Well, one of the things that, you know, as I've gotten to know you, and this is true, I think, of a lot of Africans, your mindset is much more of a we or community mindset than I think here in the United States. I've really enjoyed just hearing and listening to how, you know, you said you want to pay it forward. That's not, those aren't just words. You're actually doing it. So congratulations to you. And yeah, you may be lucky in one sense, but on the other hand, you walk the 4 hours, you know, in a day. You also earned it. So there clearly is effort involved, and there clearly is in the right place at the right time. But kudos to you for seizing the opportunity. And one other quick question. Would your village know what you're doing today, and would they be proud of what you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, when I go to my village now, everybody will stop what they're doing and will come to see me and say hi. So they really know me. It's like, and my story is the story they tell the young ones in the village. So
do you feel the burden to succeed and perform for them?
Definitely. And actually, it's very troubling to find myself at this position and look them to where at the position they are. So, but at some time, I'm like, for the generation that came before me, I did not even participate in what they're experiencing. And I try to make peace with that. I know that I can't change more. But moving forward, my generation and the next generation, I feel responsible. And that is mainly the reason why I put much effort to start 9 Mile Project with my co-founders in the US to really make sure that the key factor or the key ingredient to success for the youth from the community that I came from is quality education. If they can all get access to education, the next future, the next generation will be empowered. And that is another way of paying forward. So the burden is there, and I'm trying to do my best and impact who I can.
So to paraphrase something you just said, just to be clear, you were implying that you were not around for the genocide, so you didn't experience that, but you're focused on the moving forward and making a difference. Is that what you were saying?
Not exactly to imply about genocide, but I'll say, let's say my parents. So they are farmers, and they cannot really do much to change that. But my siblings, I can support them, empower them, make sure they get access to education so that their future is not going to be the same as their parents.
Okay, good. Thanks for clarifying. So this is actually, this question seems a little contrite, if it's the right word. I don't know. How are you trying to change the world? Because, my gosh, you're doing it. But How would you answer that question? How are you trying to change the world?
Yeah, that is a very tough question. But I'm trying to change the world in two ways. One is changing myself and empowering myself, improving myself every day. This is because I, first of all, believe a good idea or good ideas can change the world if they are put into action, if they are actualized and transformed into reality. And on that, it's a huge task for me to grow, learn, and get better every day solving problems and trying to understand the situation, what is happening in the country, what is happening in the world, so that I can get very holistic perspective on how I approach issues and problems. And from that, I can be able to bring sustainable, well thought about solutions to pressing issues we have. Second way is through action. So if no action, nothing happened really. Mm-hmm. Every day, I try to do something, not just for myself, but something that can make somebody's life different. Maybe it is that one student that we send to school. It is that one or two more students that I call or help understand a frame or make a plan of what they want in the future. So those are little things and the small steps of acting, trying to give something to the people around me is another way that I'm changing the world. And I hope in the future, as I grow, as I learn more, as I get efficient at solving problems, as more ideas come, the impact will be huge.
Love your answers. There, in fact, this idea of focusing on yourself and then focusing on others, putting it into action. Very, very practical words. For those of us who like Nike shoes, just do it is almost part of that slogan. Okay, so the next question that I'm really anxious to hear your viewpoint is, when did you realize the power of capital? And what does that mean to you?
So I really realized the power of capital in two ways. One as human capital and the other as capital, as money, investment. So growing up, I've seen poverty, I've seen people with little to no access to anything, be education, people cannot even pay school materials, people cannot even afford $1 a day to live or put food on their table. And so much transformation that I see is driven by people who come and dedicate their money or the investment into changing welfare, be education, building schools, be building best roads so that the transportation can be efficient and safe. People who bring electricity so that in just one day, 500,000 people can access to electricity for the first time in their lives. That sense of empowerment, that sense of access and equity that capital brings to people is just what I experienced and lived growing up. The other way is human capital. The investment specifically in education, in developing people who can think for the world, be able to work together and solve the pressing problems or pressing issues that we're facing. That investment through education, through mentorship, is another way that I experienced capital.
So then the next question I'm going to ask you is, what does stewardship mean to you, and how do you try to live that out?
Yes, stewardship So first of all, I came across with that word from Bible. Growing up, I grew up in church. My family and I are Catholics and believed. As much as I went to church, they preached a lot about stewardship, as in a simple words, giving back what you've given. And from that, I get a sense that the more that I'm given, the more I'm expected from. This actually translates to my daily life, or actually how this world is operating. So the skills that I got, opportunities that I got to go to school, access, all the access to network, access to certain things that I got, I have to make a use of them and produce something that is beneficial, that I can return and say, hey, this is what I've done with what you've given me. This makes a lot of sense now in my current role, because we're given a lot of fund, a lot of money to invest. And one of the ways or two ways that we actually, the steward, people that are entrusting us with their retirement money, their or family money, their savings, is that they expect me or us to manage the money well, do well with the money and the return. So, and that is the actual work, returning in terms of profit, but also returning in terms of impact that we create for people. Maybe people who will get access to electricity for the first time, people who will get access to any other welfare, are going to be created by what we get from the people who try to dedicate their capital into impact investing.
The last question is, if you could make a dream come true in your life, what would it be? And if it's too hard to pick one, you can give us a couple. It doesn't really matter. I just love to see what you're dreaming about these days.
No, it's not many. So actually, it's amazing how we end up dreaming about things that we never had. Growing up or working all those 4 hours a day, I dreamt about a place where I can go study in peace, not wondering or not thinking about walking back home and waking up earlier and coming back to school every day. So basically, my dream is, can every young person have access to quality education and not have to go through all the hardships, trekking every day to go to school, but just pack up his bag or her bag, go to boarding school or somewhere to school and focus on education and making better version of himself and herself. So if that I can achieve, my dream will have come true.
So clearly the way you grew up and the challenges and struggles that you overcame were propelling your dreams of, hey, if we can get more to not have to do that stuff and use that energy in school versus just getting to school. That's a powerful dream. And I love the fact that you've already started the nonprofit and you're actively engaged in that dream. And then obviously what you're doing at Fortis Green, the hope is that through providing power, you know, we're also making a step towards better education. I mean, everything better in the sense of that electricity brings.
Yes.
Yeah. Anything else that you'd want to share with our listeners or that you want them to know about you?
I think that is all.
Well, look, you did a phenomenal job. Thanks for staying late. I know. Oh, maybe just tell us. So you're married, right? What else?
Oh, okay. I forgot about that. I am married and they actually got married to my 12-year-old fiance. So wow. we were in a relationship for 12 years, and We've got our first son in March. So now he's actually tomorrow he's gonna turn 2 months old. And it's very exciting time, but also it's time that I'm reminded to think long term. So now it is time that I think about insurance. It's the time that I think education of not just my sibling, but of my son. Mm-hmm. So it's a great time, but also it's another time to be more responsible and focused on myself and my family.
So what's harder, getting up in the middle of the night with your son at this time or walking the 2 miles, the 4 miles each way to school?
I'll say waking up in the middle of the night is much harder because right now, I mean, sleep is very crucial. So I wish he was not crying in the middle of the night.
Well, as we just launched, or actually our daughter, our oldest, just graduated from college. So I will tell you, he will sleep through the night. And to me, at about the 3 month age, when they start smiling back on you and and kind of interacting, it all changes. So yes, you're sleep deprived, but it will not last. And would you like to have multiple kids if you can?
What I want, if I could have, if the second one will be a girl, I will stop there.
You're good, yeah.
If not, I'll also think a lot about having the third one. But yep. Two is the number that I yep. feel confident about.
So we have a girl and a boy, and so that became one of the issues. Do we have a third? And it's like, we've got two. They're healthy. They're one of each sex. The other answer is my wife has a bad back, but. No, healthy kids are an absolute gift. And so we'll be cheering from you, for you here from the States and then when I come see you. So thanks so much, Emmanuel. This was awesome. I appreciate you taking the time. Appreciate your vulnerability. You've got a bright future in front of you, and I'm excited to see where you go. So with that, don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Until next time, I'm Jeff Schaefer. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.